This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 89, interview with Joyce Tennyson, Michael Greco, and notes from Jay Mizell. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 89th podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we have something a little bit different. I'm going to present two interviews, one from well-known photographer Joyce Tennyson, one from well-known photographer Michael Greco, and some notes from Jay Mizell. I just recently came back from the PDN Photo Plus Expo in New York, and it's just a monster conference featuring all the latest products as well as some killer seminars from some of America's and the world's best photographers. I attended four seminars over the 2.5 days I was there, and it's so inspirational. You know, even though I do photography regularly, there's nothing like seeing and listening to the work and the advice of some great masters that have been doing it even longer than you, and, you know, that have work that varies from your own. It's just great to be inspired. And the photographers that they had there were just amazing. So if you missed it this year, I highly recommend that if you're ever near New York, they do this show every year. I went to it 2 years ago. It's a highly recommended show. Really, really good. The seminars are not free, but they're not crazy expensive either. To see all the products, that kind of stuff is free if you get your tickets in advance. Before we get into the actual interviews, I always like to thank people for their comments on our last podcast, number 88, where we talked about rain photography. We got a fair amount of comments from Sean G, Robert V, Shant M, Michael Vandertal, Ice Cream Man, and Glenn Uloth. Shant M actually added the comment that 1/60th of a second is a good speed to catch the motion blur for raindrops. I thought I'd add that in. Thanks so much for that comment, Shant M. As always, we love getting comments, and you could do it by email, photography.ca@gmail.com. You can go to the forum and leave comments. Just go to photography.ca, make your way to the forum. Or, of course, you can leave comments directly in our blog, which is our preferred way to get them, photography.ca/blog. All right, then, let's just get right into the interviews. And the first one is with Joyce Tennyson. I've been into her work for a good 20 years. She is a fine art photographer, and she's amazing. If you've not seen her work, look her up now. I'm going to put some links in the show notes. Her site is joycetennyson.com, joycetennyson.com. You got to check out her work. It's amazing. For this interview, unfortunately, it was recorded with a lot of ambient noise in the background, but you can still make out whatever she's saying. And Joyce and I basically talk about finding your own style. So let's just get right into the interview now. So I'd like to welcome a very special guest today. Today's guest is Joyce Tennyson, who is a fine art photographer. And I'm lucky enough to have just sat through a seminar that she did where she talked about her 40 years of photography. And I'd like to welcome Joyce Tennyson to this podcast. Welcome, Joyce.
Welcome to you, or hello, audience. Welcome, audience.
Thanks so much for doing this. So I guess I had a question about style. You were talking in your presentation, you've been doing this for 40 years, and one of the points that you made was that you like to finish certain bodies of work and then move on to new bodies of work. And you've developed a style doing this, but what I noticed from watching your work is although once you finish a project, it's finished, the projects seem to have a link from one project to the other. There seemed to be a continuity about style. And I was wondering if you could maybe talk about that for a few moments.
Sure. I completely agree with you. I think that style comes, it's like your thumbprint, you know, when you get booked at the police department, you know, or whatever, they take your thumbprint because that's your, you know, your identity. And I think that photographers' work is like part of their identity, and it looks like them, or it should look like them. It should look like them. So if you're, you know, a kind of warm, fuzzy person, your work may be warm and fuzzy. If you're a real adventurer and you're a rule breaker and, you know, all of that, maybe your work's going to look like that. So I think that your work should look, have like a psychological correspondence to your inner self.
Very good answer. What I wanted to know, though, was for people starting out who don't necessarily have a style, they should find their style maybe based on their personality. Where should they start to look, though, to get that style, especially when they're trying so many different techniques these days in digital? It's just so easy to do so many techniques. It's so easy to find an endless amount of styles. How do you develop your own personal style? I'm going to put some links in the show notes to your work so that people can see it, and they'll, of course, immediately note that you have a defined sense of style. How can people get in touch with their own sense of style?
Boy, it's a really tough thing. I have, I do teach workshops, and that's what people come for. They're looking for help with identifying style. I think that if you do work that you feel passionate about, that you're not copying somebody else, that somehow if you do work that makes you happy, that comes, you know, satisfies you in some deep way, it's probably you're gonna see clues to your style on that.
Is it possible that people are just getting too overwhelmed or thinking too hard about their own style? Even though they're creating it, they might not be noticing it, that they have their own sense of style, but they don't feel secure about it, perhaps?
I think that's absolutely possible. I know that, once again, when I look at other people's portfolios, I can often, because I've looked at so many, I can often identify what I think is a possible style that they should run with, in a way, in that, that they're, I sense something in their work. Maybe if they show me 12 images, I see something often that I think they could develop more, and that would give them more of a personal and unique style.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just seeing it, identifying it, and then doing more of it so that it becomes a bigger profile.
Okay, and if we wanted to learn from you a little bit, how did your sense of style develop? Surely you've been photographing now, as you mentioned, for 40 years. You've taken numerous subject matter, of course, and yet you've gravitated to certain subject matter. How did your own sense of style flower, shall we say?
Mine happened quite naturally in that I never really wanted to copy anyone else. And so I started off doing self-portraits, which I think gives you a lot of information about yourself. And then I did work that really felt like it was an extension of who I was, and that I didn't do work to please other people. I did work that really felt good to me. And in doing that, the style just emerged.
When you showed your work to people, as photographers often do, we need feedback, we crave feedback. Did the feedback that people give you help influence your style, or was it solely your own appreciation of the work you were producing that helped mold your style?
I think it's a combination. I really think that certainly when you get great reaction on a particular project you're working on, that it gives you confidence to move forward and investigate even more. But it's a tenuous thing. I do think, though, that just like in your own home or with your own wardrobe, you want to make choices. Like, I wouldn't wear certain clothing, for example. I think that we know what we like, and we know who we are. I mean, and I think we have to find out who we are in photography, and it does take some noodling around. But I do think if somebody just held a gun to your head and said, okay, is this you? Is this really you? Is this you? You would know the answer, and then you could build on that.
Would it also help if you have good teachers and good mentors? Is that essential? Is it essential, or can you really do it all on your own? Or must we learn from those who came before us, kind of thing?
I think you can do it on your own. I do think, everybody should take a history of photography class so that you know the great masters. I mean, you wouldn't think about being a writer without having studied the great writers. So I think that it's important to know the history. If you can't take a class, you can certainly go and buy a book on the history. It's just so you know the great, you know, leaders, you know, Auger and Cartier-Bresson, and, you know, you want to know what's gone before you so you're not reinventing the wheel. All subjects have been done before. It's, you know, in every generation finds new ways of interpreting, you know, the great themes. I do think that if you're really tough on yourself and vigilant about quality, then I think that you can do it. I mean, it certainly does help to maybe do a master class when you get to a certain level and get some feedback.
In looking at the history of photography, we can also get inspired by that history and maybe create our own style from it as well. So it's definitely going to help?
I think so. I really do. Yeah.
Thanks so much for the info, Joyce. Really appreciate it. We're lucky enough that Joyce has allowed us to put some of her work along with the podcast, and we're going to feature some of her work. So thank you so much, Joyce, and we're going to put links in the show notes on how to get people to your website, which is why don't you tell people what your website is so they can find it out.
It's just www.tennison.com. So you have to spell Tennison, T-E-N-N-E-S-O-N, because there was a great poet, you know,
yes.
And he spelled it with a Y, so we spell it with an E for me.
Excellent. Then the proper link will go in the show notes so people don't have to remember the spelling if they've forgotten it by the time they get there. Thanks so much again, Joyce, and thank you so much for the seminar.
Thanks so much.
I'd like to thank Joyce Tennison one last time for doing that podcast. There's links in the show notes to her feature on photography.ca and to her website, so please check the show notes. Okay, so the next interview is with Michael Greco. Michael Greco is a well-known portrait and celebrity photographer. His work is also fab, and it's quite dramatic. He did a seminar on the dramatic portrait and lighting, and he agreed to do a small interview with me afterwards, and you can hear it shortly. Basically, in this interview, Michael talks about the equipment that he uses in order to achieve getting a dramatic portrait. And let's just get right into the interview now.
So I'm here with Michael Greco from Michael Greco Photography, and we're here at the PDN in New York, and we just had a great seminar from Michael. Thanks so much. And one of the great things that we talked about was how we can use smaller lighting setups, and I thought maybe Michael could talk about that just for 5-6 minutes about how it's so useful and you get so much more control, as you explained, from using less equipment and not more. So first off, welcome to the podcast, Michael. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I'm wondering if you could just maybe talk really quickly. I know a lot of people on our site, they want to learn how to light. They want to learn how to light properly. And often they just think that more is more and more is better. And that's kind of the opposite of what you were trying to say in the seminar. I was wondering if maybe you could just talk about that for a minute or so.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, a picture that's very evenly lit and doesn't have shadow, light, dark, a balance of good tonal values is not a very interesting picture to me. So when you tend to use bigger light sources, everything tends to get lit very flat and very evenly. And so what I do is I'll use soft boxes, but I'll use an extra small chimera or a small strip or very tiny soft boxes and put grids on them so that I'm building pools of light that are more dramatic, and I'm only lighting certain areas and I'm not flooding the scene with light.
And one of the things you also mentioned is in order to achieve that effect, you will often bring the lights closer to your subject as opposed to leaving them further behind and then maybe flooding the room and having less control over the light. Could you talk about that as well really quickly?
Yeah, it's not that you have less control. Well, I guess you have less control over it because it's bouncing around and contaminating everything. But yeah, I mean, I'm using distance effectively. You know, when I talk about lighting or do a seminar, there are these two rules that the larger the source, the softer the light, the softer the shadows. And a source gets larger as you move it in close, but it also gets more contrasty. And that concept of moving a light in close to build contrast, to build areas that are lit and then areas that fall off, and moving the light in close to change the exposure values and make the area close to the light very bright and the areas not close to the light very dark, that builds contrast, and that's a tool that's very, very useful.
And another thing you mentioned that I appreciated was the eye likes variety in a photograph, and that's a variety of tones and a variety of exposures within the photograph, and that's something else that can be achieved by using this method, can it not?
Yeah, I mean, you could you could do it by either moving the light in close or pulling it back, or you can also do it by shaping the light by using a grid spot on it and cutting the and physically cutting the light off from an area, or a combination of both. And I use a combination of both. I'll use there are these light tulle fabric grids that I use for my Chimera boxes, and I'll use them for I'll use them to shape the light to give me a spot or a rectangular slash of light, and then I'll use the proximity of the light also to have the light fall off even more.
Okay. And for someone who's just starting, what can you recommend as like a starting kit for sort of like a general starting kit for someone that's interested in primarily portraiture?
I think Dynalite. I work with Dynalite strobes, and I think Dynalite offers like a small lighting kit that has a pack and a couple of heads, and that'll give you the basis of a really good way to learn. I think that, you know, as I was saying, don't go for necessarily the biggest soft boxes right away. Go for the smallest ones. Go for little tiny soft boxes. Go for things that make more dramatic light and light areas selectively. And try, if you can afford to pick them up, try the light tools grids. I use an extra small box and a 20-degree grid very often.
And if people want to see examples of your work, they can go to your website, which is michaelgreco.com.
That's right.
Okay. And you give seminars all over the place. Why don't you necessarily just tell us where your next seminars are going to be?
Well, my next, I'm going to do something at the Sun Glow workshops in the spring. We haven't determined the date yet. And I'm the keynote speaker at the Brazilian National Photography Congress, if anyone wants to come down to Sao Paulo. But just everything's on my website. Greco's with two C's. Like you said, it's michaelgreco.com. And just go there in the store area and you'll see everything.
Excellent. Thanks so much for doing this. Michael has also allowed us to feature some of his photographs on the site. So you'll be able to check the links for show notes and you'll be able to find his name in our list of fine art photographers. Michael Greco, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank Michael Greco one last time for that interview. Thanks so much. And then finally, I'd like to share some notes that I took from the seminar that I went to with Jay Mizell. If you haven't heard of Jay Mizell, go to jmizell.com. He would be considered by many, many, many photographers as a living legend of photography. He's been doing this for a long, long time. And he finds stuff to shoot when people find nothing to shoot. He brings his camera everywhere. He is a very prolific shooter, and I highly, highly recommend that you check out his work, whatever genre you're in. Anyway, he gave a talk called Perception, Light, Gesture, Color, and New Work. And in that seminar, he showed over 1,000 slides in 2 hours to a jam-packed room. He shared his amazing tips freely and then answered questions. He's mostly what I would call a street shooter, but I'd also call him a master seer because he really does see the invisible almost. And just checking out his work, you get to see the amazing variety of images that he creates. Here are just a few tips that I took away from the seminar. Links to go in the show notes, of course. And I've also put a link for a documentary where Jay talks about photography, and I highly recommend you take a listen as well. So I hope my notes are somewhat accurate to what Jay was suggesting. But basically, he carries his camera everywhere, and that's a tip that photographers need to do more and more often. His camera is uncapped, ready to go, and it's around his shoulder. If he sees something that happens, he can shoot it. 5 seconds later, it's often gone, but he's ready for it because the camera is open and ready to go on his shoulder. That's something that he imparts to a lot of people. By the time you change your lens and, you know, take off your lens cap and adjust your settings, sometimes the shot is over. So you need to be ready to shoot ASAP. And the only way to do this is to have your camera with you at all times. It's kind of like an extra appendage. Some wives of photographers hate this, but if you can make your peace with your better half, you'll be able to get much more shots if you always have your camera around you, because you're often always seeing things that are amazing and they're fleeting. And if your camera's not there, you're going to miss it. So one of the big tips is take your camera everywhere. Another tip is that Jay analyzes every square millimeter of his frame when he shoots. And it's important that you do the same. You know, the background is just as important as the foreground. You know, it's part of your picture and you need to be aware of it. So most of Jay's photos are uncropped. In fact, of the 1,000 or so photos, there may have been one or two that were cropped. He shoots everything full in camera. He makes sure he gets what he wants.
And you should too. You know, it's something to take with you. You know, the more you can get in camera, the less work you have to do post-production. And Jay does very little post-production work, and yet his photographs are just amazing. So you can really learn from this guy. He's been shooting digital now for the last number of years. So he's shooting just like everyone else is, but he's not using Photoshop to really manipulate the work, which is perfectly okay, but it's also perfectly okay to do most of the work in camera and see in camera. So Jay talked about perception a little bit. And, you know, the light always falls from above, right? In the natural world, light always falls from above, and our brain is used to seeing light falling from above. So it really pays to be aware and experiment with how our eyes see light. If the light is coming from a different direction through an artificial source, you may have trouble even recognizing what it is. And this is just something to be aware of. So play with light, note the direction that the light is coming in, and note the effect of that direction has. In terms of perception again, the eye normally goes to the brightest object against something dark in a photograph. So be aware of this when you're taking your shot. Something else that he mentioned is turn the photograph upside down. You know, there's no rules on stuff. You can break any rules you want. And sometimes the shapes and the way we perceive things are going to be different simply by turning the photograph upside down or looking at the scene from the opposite direction. In fact, that's another big theme of Jay's, or something that I took out anyway, is that it's your obligation to look at your subject from the opposite side. So choose the side you want to shoot it at, but go to the opposite side and shoot it from that angle too to see if it's interesting and or better. He says it's your obligation, and I believe it is. I'm a big fan of this myself. I like to play all the angles, up, down, back, and front, which melds, in my opinion, really well with Jay's suggestion that it's your obligation to check out the scene from the opposite side. Another simple note that he makes is if there are letters in your photograph, if there are words in your photograph, you have to be careful, because even if they may not be important to your intent to show the photograph, the person that looks at your photo is going to read whatever it says. They just do. If there's a word in it, we read it, so use it to your advantage. So if there are words or text in your scene, make it part of your story, or else choose another angle and eliminate it. In terms of gestures, gestures are really important in Jay's work. So Jay has allowed us to feature a few of his photographs, and one of the photographs that we're going to feature, link to go in the show notes, is a picture of a child at a window. And the child is gesturing with hands, and the gestures are so beautiful. The gesture makes the photograph. And again, those gestures are fleeting, so you have to have your camera with you. Gestures can change from millisecond to millisecond, and if you're not ready to capture them, you will miss them. And Jay doesn't feel that the gestures are the exclusive domain of human beings or living things. The way objects are placed in the scene can have a gesture as well. Even though they're inanimate, the way they're positioned, they suggest a gesture, and it is those gestures that makes the image interesting. Those gestures tell a story in the photograph, and the story is what makes the photograph interesting. Jay also spoke a little bit about scale, how varying the scale in your photographs can make the photograph interesting, so be aware of that. And finally, I just really want to say what a sheer joy it was to listen to Jay speak. He's very, very witty, very funny, sharp as a tack, and he doesn't hold anything back. Jay freely admitted that he's not the most technical guy. He knows what he's doing, but he's not technical to the nth degree. And, you know, when he talked about the histogram, you know, because he keeps getting these questions, what about the histogram? What about the histogram? Well, the answer in this seminar was F the histogram. If you want it darker, make it darker. If you want it lighter, make it lighter. By looking at the histogram, you may change your exposure, even though what you see is exactly what you wanted. So F the histogram. I thought that was pretty amusing, actually. And so I'd like to thank Jay Mizell for his great seminar, and again for allowing us to feature a few of his photographs on photography.ca. And so that concludes my report on the PDN Photo Expo in New York this year. I'd like to thank Joyce Tennyson, Michael Greco, and Jay Mizell one last time. In terms of assignments on the forum, we have two new assignments, very, very cool. One is show us where you live. That's our regular assignment, and you don't necessarily have to show us your address. Show us aspects of your neighborhood, etc. You can show us your address, but you can get more creative as well. And the level two assignment is time without clocks. So show us time, but don't show us a clock. And we've already had some really, really cool submissions. So I recommend that if you're just floating around, lurking around on the site, that you join. We're a very friendly bunch. And we have quite a good community. Pat ourselves on the back. We really do. It's a friendly bunch and a great learning environment. If you want to subscribe to our podcast to get it automatically, you can use Google Reader or you can use iTunes. The links, of course, are in the show notes. And if you ever have any trouble doing anything, you can just email me at photography.ca@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're
you're at all inspired by what you heard today, you're just going to have to do what I keep on suggesting you do, is just get out there and keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks for listening.